This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
This is 6 do's and 1 don't to encourage a positive and healthy classroom culture. And this isn't like stuff I've researched. This is like stuff that I've lived out for 14 years or something like that and try to get the right ratio of what's right. So. This is how it's worked for me or for my husband and I as we work together and teach together. And it might not work for you. It might not be the exact right ratio. But we have found that these 6 things with the 1 don't really help. And I view it sort of like a pie with God being the crust or whatever you want to call it, the center of it, the crust of it. And then each of those are like a slice of pie. And I think if one piece of the pie is missing, it really changes things. And you might find that your slice of blueberry pie needs to be bigger than the slice of strawberry pie, depending on your school culture or situation. So always keep that in mind. But I think every healthy classroom culture will have some element of these, right? And again, depending on which one you need to work on more, that piece might be bigger for you. So let's get started. This is my family, know those who labor among you. This is our oldest son, Jesse, who is here getting me water, taking out the trash after lunch, whatever. Our daughter, Mary, teaches resource room and music. That's my husband and I, our son. And Levi on the end there is our mechanic car guy. Very different from Jeff and my brains. But anyway, so here we go. So number one, I think you all have a handout. And I think we discussed this on Tuesday morning at the general session, that you are the biggest, other than God, obviously in prayer, but you are the most tangible, physical thing in your classroom that is going to work to change the culture. Your attitude about school, learning, your students, everything is huge. And everything you say, everything you do, all right, is going to have an effect on your classroom. Even if it's something you post on social media, let's say the parents say, oh, who is this new teacher? And they go, look up, what are they going to see? What do your pictures look like? Do you look like an adult? Or do you, you know, that they would entrust their child to, seriously? Or is it more kind of frivolous stuff or whatever? You are a teacher now, right? So you're going to be looked up to. You're going to be hopefully respected, depending on what you say and what you do. Not that you should fake anything, right? But that you should become that. That is important that God would have you to, I believe, in godliness. And I had 2 different, I thought back over all my, and I loved school, and I have very vivid memories of school. But I had 2 really good environments. One was when I was in second grade with this wonderful teacher. Everybody loved her. And it was a very serious classroom, and we got our work done. We were very quiet. But in the off times, we had to stay at our desk, but she would let us make these little, we called them houses. We would just take these big pieces of art paper, and we would fold them, and we would make a second story and a third story, and we would cut little doors and windows in it, and it was just a wonderful creative time. And she had this was public school, this really, really long hair, and she had a hairbrush in the 3rd drawer on the right on the bottom. And some days, she would let the girls go and brush her hair and braid it and everything, but it was a wonderful classroom environment. Because we could braid hair. No, because it was serious and we learned, but yet it was welcoming and friendly and safe and warm and all those good fuzzy things. The other one I remember specifically was my senior year. Mrs. Coons taught honors English. And oh my, we read all of Paradise Lost. We did research papers, which we had to have 500 note cards and it had to be 10 pages long. And she pushed us and it was very, very serious. But she loved English. And we knew that she cared about us and wanted us to do well. And she wasn't so much, obviously, fun and games because of her personality. But we loved that class and it was a very good culture. And again, it was a good balance between learning and seriousness and the more lighter side, which we'll talk about in a little bit more. So you are the teacher in the classroom. You determine what the culture is going to be, and it's really a huge, I want to say responsibility, but I almost view it as a privilege. It's a wonderful thing to think that the students can walk into your room and you're the king or the queen of England or whatever, and you get to determine what how it's going to be in there. Hopefully a good learning environment that is also enjoyable to be in. So one of the biggest obstacles to this, before we get into the kind of fun stuff, is the parents' attitude. Almost, I would say, the children get it from their parents. Well, what does it matter anyway? Just get school done and go make money or whatever it is. And this is changing, I think, in our culture, which is good. And I think Faith Builders has done a good job of helping that along. But what does school matter anyway? Well, first of all, it disciplines the mind. If you can do algebra and read Paradise Lost or whatever literature up on the higher levels in high school, you're going to be able to read Romans and Hebrews better and make sense of it because your mind is going to be sharpened. Secondly, it's their job right now. What student is going to slack off and make Fs, although there might be a few, and then go be the best farmer and do everything his dad says and milk all the cows and, you know, mow all the grass or the hay or whatever it is. I'm not agricultural, obviously, but it's their job right now. So let's get an A or a B in English and math, and then let's go do whatever it is, if it's driving a tractor or fixing computers or whatever, then do that well. It's your job. Whatever you do, do it with all your might, right? So it's their job. It's a good place to learn about structure and authority. God is your authority, your parents are your authority, and your teachers, if you're talking to students, are your authority. And it's a good place to learn these are the rules of society, this is how we function, another reason why we should be respected. And another one is just to be well-spoken, to be educated, intelligent, to be able to defend the faith. When I was, we were at a rest stop one time, and I think my daughter was in fifth grade. She was pretty young. And this woman, this angry woman, came up to me and said, why do you dress your daughter the way you do? And I honestly, I was shaking when I was done, but I thought for a second, and I said, well, ask her. She was in fifth grade. Oh, Lord, help her to have a good answer. And she did. She said, it's more modest. It's what the Bible says. We're supposed to cover our heads, whatever. And I was like, thank you. That little girl spoke way, if I would have said, well, because she would have thought, you know, the little girl was going, oh, my mom makes me do this. My daughter had a really good answer. Can we be able to be well-spoken enough to have the answers, to develop their intellect, to defend the faith, to have good answers when we're asked about it? I hope so. All right, here we go. Number one, godliness, the pie or whatever. And the biggest part of this would be the nuts and bolts. The teachers should be godly. You should have a godly life. I personally love to do my devotion in the morning before I even set out for school, have a prayer time and a cup of coffee. The devotions we have at school are such wonderful times to talk about God. And we'll talk about in a minute, focusing on specific issues maybe within the school. The singing. And in the schools we've been in, we do a lot of our scripture memory, singing. And Deuteronomy 6:7, teach about God when you rise up, when you lie down. It's not just devotional time. It should be in math or in English or when they're disagreeing at lunch or whatever it is. We should be applying God's law to as many situations as we can. And this is actually from the second grade phonics lesson. Some of you might recognize it. It's true blue glue. I loved it when my students learned the UE sound. I love to do true blue glue. But I believe that, and I've seen it, that God and learning scripture and singing godly songs, not necessarily scripture songs, but in our school choirs is like glue. And there is some invisible spiritual glue that bonds us together, helps us as teachers, helps our students get along better and be on that path toward godliness if we're doing these things. So number one is godliness, and it should be everything that we do throughout the day. Some practical applications. I'm going to try to give you practical examples of how does this play out. We were at a school one time, and all the swings were broken, and the school board ordered a couple of swings. So we went from like one swing to, I think it was three or four, it was one of those big swing set things, in one day. And it should have been, yay, we all have swings, you know, we can swing. It was the biggest fight. The elementary students were fighting over it, and he got it, and I didn't get it, and so the next morning, At devotions, Jeff did a devotion on, you know, sharing and thinking of the other person or whatever. And we just said, you know what? We're not going to use the swings today at all because everybody's fighting over them. And we want y'all to have a good attitude about it. We should be grateful and thankful that we have swings. And so we're going to not do the swings for a day or two. And then we added it back in. And it wasn't perfect, but it was much better. So are there times like that when our students are doing things that we want to work on that we can use our devotional time, right, or scriptures, bring scriptures into it that will enforce that? Another time we had for history, for English and math, they were in their desks. But we try for history, science time to be in a little bit more relaxed atmosphere, sit around a table, or sometimes we have couches, and they were pretty good about it. One day the boys would get it. Actually, I think the boys voted that the girls could have it. One year, the boys voted the girls can have the couches all the time. So we'll talk about that in a minute too. So they were fighting over it. I get it, you get it, no you don't, you know. And so I was like, okay, everybody sit on the floor. We're gonna sit on the floor. And then we talked again about, you know, like Philippians, consider the others as better than yourselves. It's a wonderful time to kind of pinpoint what are our weak areas, what are the areas we need to work on, and think about it. If we fix this area that's a low point, and then we fix this area that's a low point, and then we fix this area that's a low point, the whole culture of your classroom or your school is gradually, with the Lord's help and some scripture and singing, rising upward. That's a good place to be. So that's number one. Number two, keep order. And this is huge. I don't think we talk about classroom management enough just in the whole world of education. I know I was not taught enough about it when I was younger. And you have to be nice, and I hesitate to say that. I would say we have to be serious, we have to be nice, we have to be friendly, pleasant, like not mean, grumpy, authoritarian, right? But we do have to maintain order in our classrooms, and that is very hard, especially the first couple of years. Decide what's okay and what's not okay. And a lot of times, you know, your school boards might have a plan. I've said this before, I'm not advocating everything, but Smart Classroom Management is a website resource for teachers. It's Michael Lipson, I hope I said that right. He's got some really, really good stuff. And everybody has to figure out, you know, there are general rules, what works in your classroom. But you should always be aware, all right? I read a book by one teacher who said that he could even write like this and keep his eye on the whole classroom. I can't do that. We have to turn our backs, you know, every once in a while. But be aware always of what's going on in your classroom. And then stand your ground. If somebody goes over the line, and usually that's something you're uncomfortable with, and in my earlier years of teaching, it would be whatever bothered me when I went home in the afternoon. Like, I might not have dealt with it on the spot, but you know what? It really bothered me that this happened, and that bothered me, and that bothered me, and that became, okay, that's not going to be allowed in my classroom anymore. That went on the list of that's not okay, right? And again, that might vary depending on the subject or what class it is or how many you have in a room or whatever. But I got to the point where I felt, you know, if something bothers me, if it feels uncomfortable, it's probably not okay. That is something that I need to work on to keep order. And y'all know this, it's much easier to start with order from the beginning than to wait till halfway through the year and say, we're changing all the rules. But it's okay to do that if you think you need to. I've said before in the middle of the year, you know what, I've got a new rule now. This is what it's gonna be. This is why, because da-da-da-da-da. And I thought it would be okay, but you know, it's not working. It's we're not having edifying results from that, and so we're gonna change this. So we did. So stand your ground. And always be aware of what's going on in your classroom and look for those things that bother you. That's probably an area that you as a teacher need to fix, that you need to work on. Practical applications, first of all, you have to look at this picture. It's just really funny. This is like every teacher's nightmare. And I think, do y'all have those dreams? Like where, like, and then you wake up and, oh, thank goodness that didn't really happen. But I think every year I have these dreams like that something, usually it's that they won't listen to me and I keep trying to do the same thing and they won't obey, and then I wake up and think, oh goodness, thank goodness that didn't happen. One year I had a dream that my whole eighth grade class was up in my attic. And I think we were hiding from, Elizabeth, where are you? You were there. We were hiding from the Nazis or something like that, or the Russians came to take over or something. Anyway, and we were all hiding up in my attic or whatever. But anyway, so I have these like scary dreams of things like this happening. But you do need to have, obviously, a good classroom management plan. When they're in your room, you're king, you're queen, you decide. And again, if anything bothers you, even if you're in the middle of a lesson or something, you know, grab a sticky note and write it down, and then later that day evaluate what was going on, why was it bothering me, what can I do to fix it in my classroom. Don't let it go. Do not let it go. I've seen those things escalate where they bother the teacher, and then the teacher tries to talk louder than the students, and it just gets to be this like horrible war. Nobody's learning anything, and it's just a mess. So nip it in the bud. If it's bothering you, fix it. Have a good classroom management plan. And I would suggest like writing out your own, you know, this is allowed, this isn't allowed. And to be honest with you, what we have found the most successful in many cases, it was because it was a multi-grade, you know, 3 or 4 grades in a room. We just had a no talking policy. They could raise their hands and talk, they could write notes, they could do hand signals, you know. But if you're teaching one grade and you have 3 more grades trying to study or whatever, you can't have talking and passing notes and all that. It's just crazy. We had a ton of fun. We'll get to that in a minute. But there was a lot of order, and they knew the rules, and it worked. What about between classes? Are there things going on? I know one year in particular, I felt like it was my responsibility to stand outside and just kind of watch things and say, hey, don't run, you're going to crash into so-and-so, or you know, what's going on over there at the lockers or whatever. Not to police them, but to encourage edifying things, maybe to see if there, hey, is there something we need to work on? And we'll talk about that in a minute. Why are all the girls in a little group and Susie's by herself over there? You know, just be aware of what's going on. And then after recess, you know, when they come in and they're all hyped up and crazy, you know, it's like, get a drink of water, take a deep breath, and then you walk into my room. Calm down. It's not recess anymore. Art. I love art. I do it every day. I think it's a wonderful thing to do. But it's not goof off, yell, throw paint time, right? It is, we're going to work and we're going to, again, be quiet and serious and enjoy this, right? But it's going to be quiet. And this is just a classroom management story. I have to put my notes up there because if I write them down, I will forget to look at them. So there's no telling what weird things will be up there, secret codes or something. But my first year of teaching in the classroom, I'd already taught marching bands for like 10 years. Which was, I was from a, obviously, look at my last name, non-Mennonite background or whatever, but so I taught marching bands, that's how I met Jeff. And I had all kinds of crazy things. I was teaching 21-year-old college guys sometimes, and you know, older ones, and I thought, hey, I'm gonna be fine, walking into the classroom, it's very different in the classroom. So I was teaching English to this group of juniors and seniors, and it was a kind of a small private school, and there were 2 levels. The lady who'd been there forever, and me, you know, right out of college or whatever, young, I was actually like 26 or something, but anyway, I wasn't that young. And so she got all of the upper echelon level students, and my class, no joke, was the football team. I had the football team, and it was scary. They were big. I'm only 5'3". They were huge. They were muscular, and they were pretty scary. And so I had them in this class, and I'm trying to teach them Shakespeare or whatever it was, you know. And they were not real interested because they wanted to go play football. Or one of them raised Brahma Bulls, and he just did not like school. He needed that lecture about it's your job, it's authority, whatever. Anyway, and he wrote one time in his journal, he wrote, me and my dad sell Brahma Bulls. This was in South Georgia. And we went to a rodeo or whatever they have, livestock auction this past weekend. And I can still remember his name. This was like 32 years ago. And we made this, I won't even tell you because it's almost embarrassing, but we made this much money selling Brahma Bulls this weekend. I bet that's more money than you make all year. And I was like, he's right. But again, we talked about that in the morning. Says, that's not why we do this. But this was the class, if you can imagine. Football players, cowboys, you know, they whatever. And so I was doing something, and I noticed over here in the back row, I can tell you where it was in the classroom to this day. They were right back there. And they passed a magazine. I caught it. I'm like, okay. So first year in the classroom, I'm like, all right, so I'm going to walk back there real nonchalantly. Now, Jaren's, whatever I'm doing. And I walk back, and I grab the magazine, And I just kept talking about Jaren's, whatever I was saying. And as I walked up the aisle, and I got to about the front of the aisle, one of the boys said, and it was not a evil magazine, but it was like a fashion magazine, like for girls or something, Vanity Fair, one of those, whatever. And he said something derogatory with a bad word in it, in the sentence that I wanted to look at it or something like that. And I turned around and I said, and again, I was kind of like on a whim doing this in faith or something, part of the marching band of me came out and I said, "Who said that?" And they wouldn't tell me. And they just kind of laughed. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to win this battle right now, but I'm going to win it in a minute. So I went up and we finished our lesson or whatever, and lunch was next. And hi, Brandon, how are you? No, you're fine. You're fine. I sang under him at Mass Choir Music Camp this year, and he picked the most beautiful music. I'm still singing it. Thank you, Brandon. And so, what? Okay, so where was I? Oh, so the lunch was next, and the bell rang, and they all wanted to go to lunch, right? So I go instead. The door was over here in this old creaky classroom, and I stood in front of the door, and I stood my ground, and I said, "You're not going to lunch until I find out who said that." And I thought, they're all going to tackle me. and I'm going to be lying on the floor with my skull bleeding. And I started thinking, like, okay, well, I could always let the girls go first because I know it wasn't a girl's voice. And I was trying to think of all the things I could do. And at that point, the biggest guy in the class, I still remember his name, this huge, huge whatever, tackle, linebacker, whatever it was, I don't know, said, I shouldn't use his real name, but anyway, Elvin, tell him it was you. Tell her it was you. So right there, he said who did it, right? And I knew, and it was kind of like he was on my side in a little bit of a way. He trusted me enough or whatever. And so I said, oh, okay, you can all go out. So they all went out. I talked to the young man. I talked to the principal. It was taken care of. So those are just some strategies, but don't let it go. If something happens that's not okay, don't let it go. It's not okay. If you let it go, they're going to push you more and more and more. Oh, here's another story. I love stories. We were teaching Vacation Bible School like this past year, and children from the community would come in, and there was one little boy. He would always sit like right here, right next to the teacher, who was a young, you know, teen. And every year, he only comes to church for Vacation Bible School. And every year, he's like the heckler, you know, when the person's talking and the person's like, you know, yelling things back at him. And this is like in church with all the adults and everything. So the little children are sitting up front before they're dismissed. And every year he does this. I think this is the third year he'd done it. And this was the first year that we were actually in charge of doing the devotion time. So in the years past, the other guy would be up there and he would, you know, be saying something. That's whatever. And hey, give me that. And what is that? What do you have? And he was just obnoxious. And the girl would, you know, shh, be quiet, be quiet. And he would be quiet for a minute. And then he would start, you know, he obviously needed attention. And he would just constantly be talking until they were dismissed. So I hadn't even thought about it. It was the first day and we were doing it was a medical thing. I can't even remember what we were doing. We did the stony heart and the brain surgery with the cauliflower and all that stuff. Anyway, and so I was supposed to be the nurse. So Jeff was up there doing something silly or something and had a good Bible lesson with it. But this little boy was like right there. And so Jeff said something like, well, I'm a doctor. He had the little doctor's outfit on. He said, well, I'm a doctor. I can take care of this. He said, no, you're not. You're not a doctor. You're lying. That's fake. Blah, blah, blah. And I automatically went to teacher mode. And I later thought, oh, dear, I was in church. But I went up and I said, you're not allowed to do that here. You need to be quiet. And it was the first time in 3 years that anybody had told this child that he needed to be quiet. He, a little bit later, he just, and I wasn't mean, I just said, you're not allowed to do that here. You need to be quiet. He did it. And I looked at him, and the rest of the week, not a word out of that child. And I'm not that scary, I don't think. And I wasn't being mean. It was just, that's not okay here. And I don't think we realize the power that we have to just say, it's not okay. Oh, okay, it's not okay, I won't do it. And I think sometimes we're not sure, what do we do? And they try to push us and they will get away. I have some more stories if we have time, but they will get away with whatever they can if you let them. Not necessarily bad, but maybe naughty and time wasting. That's what bothers me. If it's wasting your time, then it's not okay. You know, I'm not a book finisher, as in I'll cram everything at them and it's over their heads. If they're understanding it, they're comprehending it. I like to finish the books by the end of the year, and I figure out 3 pages a day, this many tests, and I'm not real organized or analytical, but I do that much. And if we don't get all these silly bunny trail time-wasting things, we can do that. Students are masters, y'all know that, at wasting time and bunny trails. They'll try to do it to you, right, just to get, it's not okay. That's funny, haha, we'll talk about it later, right? Or I'm the teacher, I get to tell stories. You can tell me the story at recess or whatever it is. Keep control, keep going. Again, if it bothers you, even if it's okay, but it's wasting time or whatever, nip it in the bud. Okay, number three, that was number two, right? Order. Number three is attainable workload. And I could say a lot about this. Push your students hard. Cut the limb away so they have to fly. I have found that there is a balance between how much work we can do and get out of them and the curriculum like being too hard. And I have found that 97% of the time my students were, and I'm talking about the ones that I can't do this, it's too hard, or whatever. I did a survey. I went through every student I had taught in 12 years, and I wrote every class and every student and which ones did this, and I found that 97% of the time, the students could do it. They might be lazy, they might be unmotivated, they might need a worksheet instead of just copying it out of the textbook. They could still do the textbook. Maybe they just needed a worksheet or whatever, but 97% of the students just need to be motivated. They could do it. 3%, I'll hold it. 3% of them, the curriculum really was a little bit over their heads. Does that make sense? So you might have to, like I said, make worksheets or maybe even let them do it orally or something like that. There are modifications you can make. Most of the time, it's motivation. And I think so many times we say, oh, it's too hard for them, give them the easy way out or whatever. Don't do that until you have given it like 97%. Have you tried everything with them? And this is going to look a little bit confusing. This is from Why Students Don't Like School, which is a fascinating, really long book by Daniel T. Willingham. And if you'll look, the top part, these are your struggling students. These are your bright students, okay? So we have two camps, bright students and struggling students. If the content, meaning your textbooks, if the content is normal, and the opposite of this would be like trying to give third graders Shakespeare, right? You could probably do it and they might get a little bit out of it, but it's really not gonna be accessible for them. So if the content is accessible, and so let's say it is accessible. Let's say it's we're teaching gerunds in eighth grade, and they can learn that. That's accessible for them if you present it well. Now, workload would be, you're going to do 5 worksheets with 20 problems each, and I want you to diagram 100 gerunds. Does that make sense? So they can understand the content, but you've just given them a super hard workload. And I think we do that sometimes. I said this in one of the other sessions, but one of the wisest things somebody ever told me, it was my first year teaching a new curriculum, and it was a little bit what I felt was a heavy workload. Very good content and stuff, mostly. And so I went to this teacher that had taught it 20-something years, and I said, what do you do with this? It seemed, because they taught the same curriculum, same subject on a different level. And I said, this just seems like a lot. I'm losing some of them just because it's just so much. They understand the concept, and they might get the first 10 right, but when they get to in the 20s and 30s, they're getting them all wrong just because it's too much work. And this teacher wisely said, that's easy. Do all the odds. Oh, okay. And again, if there are 10 questions, you can't say do the odds, that's cheating. But if there are 30 or something and they're understanding it well, it's better to do 15 of them, 1, 3, 5, 7, and get them right and understand it than look at 30 of them. I'm never going to get all this and I got the first 5 or 6 right. Have y'all noticed that when you grade papers? If you're grading a paper and the first page, like, wow, and you think they've got 100, and then you go to the second and the third page and pretty soon they have a 40 or whatever, it's going downhill. That's your problem. They can get the content. It's easy for them, or they understand it, but they're getting bogged down in all the heavy workload. So the ideal combination is to have content that's accessible. Because if the content is too hard, right, you're gonna lose them, even if they have only do five of them, but your third graders aren't gonna do Shakespeare. If it's a struggling student, the content is accessible, which again, 97% of the time it is, and they don't have to do 8 pages of work, you're gonna be okay. Even with a bright student, if they're unmotivated and you give them a heavy workload, you've lost them. But notice this is the good column that works with every student, struggling student or a bright student. If the content is accessible and you're giving them an attainable workload, it's not too much for your struggling student, your bright student can handle it also. And if you want to say, I'll give you 5 extra points if you do all the evens, then you've got your bright, motivated students happy too, but you haven't bogged down the other ones. So when we talk about, and I'm just gonna go back to this, this is what I mean by attainable workload. If your students are bogged down with all this work, they're gonna be discouraged and your whole classroom culture and atmosphere is gonna plummet. And sometimes I think it's busy work, and depending on the situations, like some curriculums needed extra work so the students had something to do, and so they had these extra pages and things. Let's maybe look at that and say, is there maybe something else we could do, or do we need to do all of this, or can we discuss it and do it together as a group and take turns answering rather than you go off by yourself and do all 3 pages? Are there some ways we can make that work? And I think there are, so that we're lightening up their workload. Yes, they need to do their English by themselves. Yes, they need to, or not by themselves, but the homework part of it. Yes, they need to do their math by themselves. But do they need to sit and do 3 lessons of Bible by themselves and 5 lessons of, or 5 pages of diagramming or whatever? Look at the workload and don't try to overload them. And while a lot of us can't pick our curriculums that we want, we can say do the odds, or we're going to do this lesson together, you know, meet together at the table, we're going to work on it together, things like that. So that's what I mean by that. Number 4, this is huge. Creativity. There has to be creative, fun, enjoyable, whatever. Art is a huge way to incorporate this into your classrooms. In my classroom, we do it every day at the end of the day for 15 minutes or 20 or 30, depending on how much we get our work done. I go more on we're doing this and this and this rather than 20 minutes of this and 10 minutes of this. If we finish early, great. We'll go on to the next thing. If we need 10 more minutes to do a science experiment, we're gonna do that. So depending on it, I use art, it works really well. Spontaneity, I did another session, we went more into this, but you can plan kind of like little surprises for them, even if it's little things, like they come in and you're studying Mexico and there's a Mexican candy on their desk. Little things like that are interesting, or we're gonna make a piñata day or whatever. You can plan it, or a lot of times the students, if it's edifying and educational, if they bring in something or they want to talk about something or whatever. I'll give you some examples of that in a minute. But just anything out of the ordinary. One year, I was before I was going to be a teacher, I was going to be an advertising person or something. My dad had convinced me that I was going to do that. And the worst job I ever had, it was horrible. It was at an in-house ad agency for this giant insurance company in downtown Dallas, and I would sit in traffic. Honestly, it took me like an hour to get there, and it was Tuesdays and Thursdays because I was in school Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and it was almost like a nightmare. They would get out, they would go to the parking lot, and they had the little briefcases, and they would go into the building, and they would all go up the escalator at 8 o'clock in the morning, and here I was on the escalator with my little briefcase or whatever, and then you go to this boring office with nothing on the walls, it was all white walls, and we had those little cubicle things, and we go in there, and finally it was lunchtime, and you know what? Everybody would get on the escalator, go down, and they had this boring lunchroom, nothing on the walls, plain tables, clank, 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 it was horrible. And then you go back to your cubicle again for a couple of hours, and then it was time to leave, 5 o'clock, got back on the escalator, go down the escalator, and then get in your car, and then sit in traffic for over an hour in Dallas. I remember I was sitting in traffic one time, and I just wanted to go home. And I didn't like this, and I was glad I did it, because now I know I didn't want to do that, and I want to be a teacher. But I think I feel like I cried. I was so upset, and I was like, I never want to do this again. It's so boring and so cookie cutter and blah, 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 blah. Do we do that to our students sometimes? Come in, math lesson, do your math. do your English, time for recess. And you ask students, what's your favorite time? Recess? No, I mean, like, what's your favorite subject? Do you enjoy science or history or lunch? We play spikeball? You know, come on. There's so much more. We talked about that this morning. Learning is interesting. Learning is fun. We can make it that way, or we can make it boring. And part of that is art, a science experiment, anything out of the ordinary. All right? Here are a couple of examples of that. And again, this has to be contained, controlled. It can't be unedifying. It can't be out of order or wild. There is a balance in your classroom between order and enjoyment, and you have to, if you notice, the order is the one that weighs a little bit more. If you have order and control in your classroom, you can have an incredible amount of fun. You'll be okay with it because your boundaries are drawn. Too many times, as teachers, we can focus on one or the other, and it's authoritarian, and they hate it. Or it's, hey, we're going to have a great time. I'm the cool teacher. Hoo-hoo, we're going to goof off all the time. And what'd you get in math? Oh, an F or whatever, you know. And we can't err on either side. We have to have a balance. But your order, I believe, I found that your balance needs to be more on the order side. And the more, and it's kind of like a balance too, right? The more order you get, well, now we can add some little bit of fun in. Now let's add a little bit more order and let's add a little bit of fun. You can go anywhere on a field trip. I've told my students before, I would take y'all to Russia. I've always wanted to go up to Alaska and then like cross the Bering Strait and then go into like Siberia and then go over to Moscow and see St. Basil's Cathedral and all this. But when they're well behaved like that, I'm like, I could take y'all anywhere. You go on a field trip. Have y'all ever done the lineup thing? I got this from marching band. But honestly, you put them in single file or double file lines quietly, all dressed nicely, behaving well. People will part the waters for you. Oh, you can go. Oh, Lord, this. We were at an aquarium one time. And the lady came up to me. She said, "What is this?" And I thought she meant like we're Mennonite. She's like, no, are you a school? I said, oh, yeah, we're a school. And she said, this is the most well-behaved group I've ever seen. And we had been like going all through the aquarium, you know, whatever. I guess she'd been watching us. And she came back later and she gave us books and calendars and bookmarks. And she said, I just want to give you all this stuff. And I was like, thank you. And we had a blast. It was wonderful. But they were all, you know, in order. So keep a good balance. Always have more, a little bit more order than you have. And again, I hate to hesitate to use the word fun. It really is creativity, spontaneity, teacher-controlled, teacher-planned, organized, within limits, fun. All right. So variety, things like February fun days, things like art. I try to do a different art project every week, and even the guys will like it. And if they don't, say that's fine. You can go back to your desk and write an essay on whatever. Spontaneity, again, things that you plan or that the students want to do. And one of my examples is for a February fun day one time, I heard the students ask the teacher, can we have a crazy hair day where we have mohawks and dye our hair green or whatever? No, that's not edifying. And the fact that they even ask that makes me kind of go, ooh, what's going on there? You know, it should be edifying stuff. And anything different or out of the ordinary. So here are some examples. Like I said, I try to always have a different art project that we're working on. There's a table in the back that I just leave with whatever art supplies for that week are going on, and they can go weave or paint or whatever it is in there. One school we were in, we had a wonderful science area, I guess really is what it was, which anything is, but they would bring in roadkills and stuff like that. One time a 16-year-old girl brought in a bobcat that they just a roadkill in the morning, but they're wonderful. My son ended up taking this home, dissecting it. The heart, he said, was as big as a plum. It fit in his hand. He said in its stomach, and this is this animal right here, in its stomach was grass and a sparrow. And he went on to study science rather extensively. He loved science. And I think it was because we picked up roadkill on the side of the road and I let him take it home and dissect it. It was crawling with fleas too. It was rather scary. So, and this other one is, this is just like a picture to remind me of a story, but this year we did American history and we were studying the colonial period. And y'all ever read the book Phoebe the Spy? Where they poisoned, true story, they poisoned George Washington's peas. And she catches the guy and she grabs the plate from George Washington before he puts a bite of peas into his mouth and she throws it out the window. And they're like, what is this 14-year-old girl doing? And the chickens eat the peas outside and fall over dead. And she was right. She had caught the spot. Anyway, so we were reading these wonderful books. And one of them was about Ben Franklin, and he loved a 14-course meal. And so my student said, wait, 14-course meal, what's in that? And I said, well, I don't know. And we kept reading that, wait a minute, what is in a four, what does that mean? And I said, well, you know, they bring out a course and you eat it, and then they bring out the next course, and then you eat it. And then, but what's in the courses? Well, meat and vegetables. And they kept asking, I'm like, this is a golden opportunity. So I researched it, and it was incredibly interesting. It was like they have a punch, and then they have like an appetizer, and then they have a vegetable, and then they have two different kinds of meat, like a turkey, and then they had like a beef, and then they had a fish, and then they had all this stuff, and then the best one was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like to cleanse your palate, where they had like something before your dessert to get the salty meat taste out of your mouth before you had the dessert. And anyway, it was really interesting. And then I don't remember if I said it or they said it. It was like, hey, we could have a 14-course meal for our history night for the parents or whatever. And sometimes I say those things, and then I think later, oh dear, how are we going to do this? Is going to be a lot of work. And so we did. We invited the parents and the grandparents or whatever, and we had this wonderful 14-course meal, and we played colonial games, and it was a really great time. So anything like that, listen for what your students. A lot of times I get my ideas from the textbook, or the students will say, hey, what's a 14-course meal, right? Grab a sticky note, write down, 14-course meal. I don't know, but I'll find out. Okay, let's go back to your book, because we have to finish by the end of the year. All right, and one year, it was this past year, we were doing a journal assignment, and it was describe your favorite place. And so my favorite place is the beach. I love it. So I wrote down, I love the beach, and I like to hear the waves, and I love to find shells and shark's teeth and pieces of pottery. The last beach we went to for our anniversary, I found all this old pottery from shipwrecks and things. It was fascinating. And then you have to, for mine, for the group I have now, you have to put color on every page, right? So we sketch something, whatever. And then we read them. It's a small group, so we go in order. And, you know, what's your favorite place? And you read it, and you show, you know, what you did every day. It's a writer's circle on a grand level, but we were doing it every day. And one of my students said, oh. They said, what is that? And I said, it's the beach, and I like the waves. And they said, well, I've never been to the beach. And I went, oh, okay. And so suddenly we jumped ahead 6 chapters in science to the ocean chapter. Well, we're just going to cover this, you know. And so for 2 weeks, we did the whole ocean chapter. And we learned about coral and crabs and seagulls and digging in the sand and the tides going in and out and all those wonderful things. And I made some phone calls to parents and arranged cars and things like that. And then we finished early 1 week, whatever. And I said, and tomorrow we're going to go on a field trip. Where are we going to go? We're going to go to the beach. Really? Yeah. It was about a 2-hour drive. We left early morning. It was one of the most fabulous days that we had all year long. We went to the beach. We found these giant horseshoe crabs. It was the beach we went to was actually a horseshoe crab sanctuary. We saw seagulls. We found seashells. We dug in the sand. The tide went out while we were there, and we walked on the coral, and we grabbed stuff and picked it up and whatever. It was just fascinating. And then we brought home bags of shells and dead stinky crabs and things like that. And it was great. And it just came from one of my students saying, oh, I've never been to the beach. So listen to what they say. Get anything like that. And was that completely educational and edifying? Absolutely. So anything that you can do to make learning enjoyable, fun, creative, and different. And again, it has to be edifying. Be careful, especially with February fun days. Those can get silly. But there's some good lists around edifying good things you can do that are creative, especially in the middle of winter. All right, number 5. This is huge. Praise and encourage your students. Cheer them on. Look for the good things that they do and find their talents. Every student has some area that they're great in. And I love to say, hey, I had one student. I called him Mr. 99. He actually has graduated now. I had him in second grade, and he would make a 99 on everything. And we just called him, hey, Mr. 99, did it again, you know, and everybody kind of acknowledged. And then we had, I have a science girl, you know, and I've had 2 of them, actually, and they would bring me in squirrel skeletons and all this just crazy stuff that they found that they love. You love science. That's awesome. Hey, you're good at art. Look at so-and-so's art. So-and-so hit a home run. Find out what they're good at, and not to lift them up and you know, make them prideful. But usually it's the poor in spirit ones, right, that you're looking for, who need some encouragement. Look for the good things. And I think you've all heard the story of the starfish. The little boy was walking and all these, there had been a big tide or whatever, and all these starfish were lying on the beach dying, drying out. And he picked up one, he threw it in the ocean, and he was walking along picking up starfish and throwing them in the ocean. And this man came along and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, all these starfish are going to die and dry out, so I'm saving them." And he said, "There are thousands of starfish. What are you doing? You can't save them all." He said, "I just saved that one." So look for the students that are more down and out, quiet, maybe, you know, aren't the great sports people or the 99 all the time. Find their talents and look for them. I had one student one year, and nobody in the family had graduated. Very low self-esteem, not a great family situation. And that student, I felt, so there were times that I gave up. I really did. At the end of the day, I would just say, I cannot encourage a student anymore. They won't do it. They won't write. They won't whatever. I would sit sometimes, you know, everybody, I said, I noticed they weren't doing their work. And I said, okay, if your work is done, you can go to lunch 3 minutes early. But if your work's not done, you need to stay here and finish. So, of course, that one student was there. I would go and sit down and say, what do you, well, I don't know what to write. Well, what was the question? Da, 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 da. Well, what do you think? Well, da, da, da. Good, write that down. And it was just like pulling teeth to get the student to do anything. And it got a little better, but it would exhaust me. And there were days that I said, I'm giving up. I can't do any more with that student. It's taking all my energy. I'm so tired of it. And then 3 a.m, I'd wake up and say, you know what? I could try this with that student. And the next day I would go back and say, hey, listen, we're going to try this. That student eventually, and this was over several years, was the first one in the family to graduate and became a teacher. Glory be to God, right? But we are in where God has put you in the classroom. You're there for a reason. Encourage those students. Find their talents and encourage them in those good things. This is Mr. Wood. And this summer, I began thinking about Mr. Wood. Mr. Wood was my English teacher my junior year. And I will never forget him. We were public school. He was older when I had him. I'll tell you where I got the picture in a minute. But anyway, I remember a couple things about him. One was really funny. The first day he said, "All right, class, my name is Mr. Wood," and he wrote it on the board. You know, it's not Mr. Woods because there's only one of me. He was an English teacher. It was not plural. There were some boys in the class that all year long, "Hey, Mr. Woods, Mr. Woods." One year, and this was also, it was an afternoon. Usually we had our English in the morning. This was in the afternoon, and I had a class. I was in a class. There were only a couple of girls, and it was a lot of the football or basketball players. I'm not sure. It was kind of a challenging class. And he would get real wrapped up in whatever he was doing, and he loved English. He made us write. He made us write journals. And at first I thought, oh, journals. That's when I began to love writing, which when I was in his class, and I began writing just pages. I loved it. It was like I discovered my voice. One day, this is kind of funny, but there were some empty desks in the room because it was a small class, and this one boy, I know his name, quietly motioned for them, pass me that empty desk. So they passed the desk to the next guy, and they passed the desk to the next guy, and they passed the desk to the next guy, and then the boy who asked for the desk sat in the back on the left next to the window. We're on the second story. So eventually he got the desk, and he waited till Mr. Wood had his back turned, and he put the desk out the window. Mr. Wood turned around about that time, and he just held it there out the window, and he waited for a while, and then he dropped it. This horrible loud noise, bang, you know, his big metal desk with the thing attached to it. Mr. Wood walked over and looked out the window and said, oh, he came back. So in this literature story, he just kept going. I remember several things about Theodore. He's a wonderful, nice man. So my senior year, I got my schedule, and it said honors English class with Mrs. Coons, who I talked about a while ago. And I went, oh, honors English? I don't want to be in there. How did that happen? They must have had another scheduling problem, and I don't want to go in there. And I've heard they read Paradise Lost and write 500 note card research papers. I don't want to go in there. So I went to, right away, first day of school, went to the counselor's office, and I said, there's a problem. I think something's wrong. They put me in honors English. I was a senior, and she said, well, that wasn't a mistake. You're supposed to be in that class. And I said, why? And she said, well, evidently your junior English teacher, Mr. Wood, thought that you would do really well in that class, and he recommended that you be put into honors English. And I was like, oh. And I really respected Mr. Wood. So I said, I'll try it. It was a turning point in my life. I loved that class. So you can be that for one starfish or one student. Find that student, encourage them into whatever area they're good at, whatever it may be, writing journals. Okay, and I love this. Encourage the young men to lead out. I, especially you ladies, lady teachers, have a plan. We had a plan. I was in a school once that a lot of visitors came in, and it was not uncommon at all, just have somebody walk in the room. And we just had a rule, whichever two gentlemen run the upper left-hand side, because they would see the people come in first, we're supposed to go and get two folding chairs immediately, bring them in, and say, welcome to our classroom. You know, here, please have a seat. I would just say, oh, welcome. The boys are going to get you some seats right now, whatever, a chair. So, you know, welcome, come on in, have a seat. Encourage the young men. I had some juniors and seniors one year, and when in chapel or whatever, when the speaker would ask questions, nobody would answer, and then the girls would eventually answer. And I said, come on, you guys need to be answering. You're going to be the future leaders of the church, whatever. You need to be, no matter what grade it is, you know, y'all need to be answering. And they started doing it more. I'm sure some other teachers were encouraging them too. But, you know, they're awkward. They're in junior high or whatever. And you know, girls tend to mature, you know, intellectually faster or whatever, think on a little bit different level than guys. I don't mean that bad. I just mean it's just true. They need some encouragement. It's amazing how they will step up to the plate and take leadership roles if you encourage them. But they do need your encouragement. And ladies, it's awesome to say, I was one year, I had to move classrooms, and I just said to the gentleman, hey, why don't you get the geography song playing, get it started? And so they would start the class. And not only that, then they would grab the pointer and start pointing to the different countries as we, you know, sang them, and I could get my books together, and it was wonderful. Give them opportunities. Whenever you think, oh, I'm too busy, whatever, encourage the young men to lead out. They will. It'll bless you. It'll bless them. Okay. I like pretty numbers, in case you haven't noticed. And I was looking for pretty numbers, and I found, when I looked for the number 6, I found this, and I thought it was really funny. I was born, this tells my age, whatever, but I was born in 1963, so I'm not that old. This is a year before I was born. Guess why it's called Motel 6? Anybody want to guess? It was in California. It may or might not help you. Anybody want to guess? It's just an interesting fact. Come on, guys. Gentlemen. What? I'm sorry. We need the wiser ladies to answer. Okay, close. It has to do with why it's in, because it was in the 60s is the answer. He's on the right road. It was in the 1960s. And you go to a motel. Come on. What? There was, like, Route 66 and stuff like that. Like, it was the 50s and 60s were a time where people would, for leisure, get out in their cars and travel. Okay, come on. Anybody? Ladies? Wiser ladies? This is funny. It's probably so far out of y'all's realm. Because it cost $6. A hotel, a brand new hotel in 1962, cost $6 a night. Isn't that crazy? Okay, anyway, so that has nothing to do with anything. Number 6. I mean, it does. It's a history lesson, right? It's a history lesson. Tell stories. Use these to target those areas that you're trying to bring up and work on, like in devotions and things like that. And I have two stories I tell my students, and I'm going to tell you them. And think these are examples. If you want to use them, you can tell your students, you know, here's a true story that I heard at Teacher's Week. But think of your own from your childhood. The one was if some of my students are feeling down and out by themselves, sad or whatever, I'm like, okay, what's the story? When I was in fourth grade, my family moved to a new school across town. And the first day of school, I didn't know anybody except the girl next across the street. She was nowhere. So I'm walking around the playground, you know, kind of looking, oh, there's some rocks on the playground, you know, hoping somebody will come talk to me. And this prissy girl came up with three or four of her friends, and she said, "What are your socks?" And I was like, "Socks? Uh-huh. They're my socks, you know. We wore socks in the 70s, or actually this is in the 60s, so I think. And I looked at their socks, and they had those cool Bobby socks, you know, and I had the dorky 1960s knee socks or whatever. And I was like, well, and they just, those are hideous, hideous, ugly socks. Look at her socks. And they walked off. And I'm like, oh dear. You know, I wanted to go crawl in a hole. Here it was, my first day in a new school. I don't know anybody. They hate my socks. It's the end of the world when you're in fourth grade. And so I went home and I said, "Mom, I've got the wrong socks. We have to have different socks." And anyway, she did eventually get me socks, but it was another day or two or three. And I finally figured out, you know what, I'm just going to roll my big old ugly knee socks down where they look like Bobby socks. But I tell my students that so they can empathize a little bit. That's what it feels like to be picked on. That's what it feels like when people are mean to you and they make fun of you or laugh at you. And they can empathize because most of the problems are selfishness. I think I'm cool. I can make fun of you. Well, this is what it's like when you're not cool and somebody does make fun of you. The other one is in the same school, Tony the janitor. Tony would walk around and he had to clean up the barf and all that stuff in the lunchroom. He had a deformed arm, and I'm not sure, at first I thought he might have been in the Vietnam War, but because that had a big scar on it. It was permanently bent at an angle. It was real big, and his left leg, something was wrong with it too. He had a funny shoe, and he had to go around and, you know, clean up all the messes and vomit and things like that. And on the last day of school, all the students were running out, you know, it's yay, we're free, and they were running out the end of the school, and it was a really windy day in May, and they were reaching their hands under their backpacks, and they were throwing their papers up in the air. Yay, we're done with school, get rid of all these stupid papers, you know, and the papers were flying in the wind. It was really kind of neat. It looked like confetti everywhere, and I was one of the last ones out of the building, and there were just, I was looking at all of these, I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat, you know, and so I started reaching my hand into my bag. And as I did that, I looked, and it was like more confetti, and the wind was blowing, and they were rolling and rolling and rolling across the, and there was this giant cyclone fence at the end of the field. It was a pretty big field, public school, softball field, whatever, and it went all the way up, and all those papers were sticking against thousands of them, and then more were rolling and rolling, and the whole field was full of papers, and I'm like, well, maybe this isn't so neat. And honestly, they were way up, because it was windy, they were way up the fence, all plastered all along the back side and up this side. And I was like, wow. And then I looked, and Tony was down there with a trash bag, and he was picking up one or two papers at a time and putting them in the trash bag. And I thought, I'm not going to throw my papers out. And I zipped my backpack back, and I'm like, I'm not going to do that. So I love to tell that story at the end of the year when students are wanting to, you know, good, I'm done with this book, and rip the cover off, whatever. I actually made them kiss their books. Like, you finished the whole book. Look how much smarter you are now. Kiss your book. Mwah. You know, good. And then rather than allowing them to throw them in the trash can, gently pass them down the row, and we're going to stack them nicely over there. And don't disrespect your books. Look how much knowledge they gave you. And that helps us back to the beginning of, it's your job. School's important. It matters. And little things like ripping the cover off your textbook and throwing it in the thing, you do have something to do with it. So tell stories. The one don't allow mocking or bullying. It's nasty. It's mean. Your students must feel safe, at least in your classroom. You can't handle what happens on the weekend or whatever, but they should know when they walk into your classroom, Mr. or Mrs. or Miss whoever is going to protect me. They love me. They care about me. They need to feel safe in your classroom. And part of that is having that eagle eye, looking around, knowing what's going on. Don't let any student feel like that, right? They should instead feel elevated, all right? In the classroom, instead of mocking, it should be, you know, oh, look at so-and-so, ha-ha, there. We're a team. We're going to work together. Instead of cliques, we're going to include everybody. Instead of giggling and note passing and whispering and divisions, Everybody's included. Everybody's important. We're going to celebrate everybody's birthday. In one school we were in, there was this like clicky thing going on, and we just said at a parent meeting, you know what, when somebody has a birthday, you should invite everybody in at least that class, not just your friends, and leave out the one child. Include everybody. Look for the ones that have their heads down and they're crying, or the ones sitting alone. At, you know, what's wrong? I had a teacher my senior year one time, or my junior year, another teacher. I was sitting by myself on the steps. I will never forget Mr. Sweatman. And he came up and he said, what's wrong? And he didn't solve all the problems in the world, but he stopped to talk to me, and I still remember it 41 years later or something. It meant a lot to me. So look for those students. Try to lift them up and don't allow them to be bullied in your classroom or anything, made fun of, anything like that. Don't allow it. You're the king or queen of your classroom. You decide. Outside the classroom, look during sports time breaks, things like that. I know of at least two schools that do not allow competitive sports because of the attitude. I've seen 17-year-old boys throw metal folding chairs at girls before because they were going to win their game or whatever it was. It can really monitor it. It can really bring out the nastiness. Try to teach gerunds when you've got a soccer game with the school across town coming over the next hour. Good luck. You might lose them the whole week because of it. So monitor the attitudes and things like that. Deal with it. It's your responsibility. If somebody's being mean, those parents have put that child into your care for that time. Look out for that child. Give them lectures. Tell them stories. Have an eagle eye. You can control a lot just with a look and a mm-mm. I had a boy one time, bless his heart, we were reading out loud, and every time he would read, his voice was cracking. And a couple of the girls were I looked at him, I went, mm-mm. It never happened again. They just knew that was our culture in our classroom. And every once in a while, something new would happen like that, and they would slip up, and they knew. All I had to do was go, mm-mm, like that. It never happened again. Talk to individuals if you need to. Susie, you cannot laugh when the boy's voice crack. How would you feel? How did you feel when this happened to you? Something similar, you know. And then if you absolutely have to, talk to their parents or something like that, right? But usually you can control that in the classroom. And my favorite phrase, say this with me, that is not allowed in my classroom. Like the little boy at VBS. You know, that's all you need to say. Nicely, it's not allowed. You can't do that. I don't allow it. Instead, we're a team. I love pronouns. We are going to do this together. We are going to finish our books. We're going to go to the beach, whatever it is. We're going to work together. And again, you're the teacher. You're the cheerleader, the team leader. Encourage them to work together. They will catch the spirit. All right. There you go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The Inn, Motel 6. And this was what was supposed to be on the back. There's a graphic that did not get on there. I broke this down even more, just in case you were wondering. I'll leave it up there. God bless you. Teaching is wonderful. You're serving students. Do a good job. God bless you. Bye.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.